prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law.
Secrets will be revealed.
Myths dispelled.
From the studio gym where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. As usual, we're going to be dispelling myths, and one of the myths that we're going to dispel today is the way that we eat today, genetically proper for us. My guest today has been on the show before. It was actually a few years ago. We talked about this subject. We're going to dig a little deeper into the subject matter today. He's Dr. Lauren Cordain. He's a professor at Colorado State University in the Department of Health and Exercise Sciences, but more importantly, he's the author of a book called The Paleo Diet, and a couple other books as well related to this nutritional protocol. Welcome to the show, Dr. Cordain.
Hi, Carl. It's good to be here.
Yeah. And, you know, when I had you on the show originally and reading your book really changed the way I look at the diet. And I think that most people we think of ourselves as being intuitive, but the reality is that the intuitiveness of the way we should eat has kind of been bred out of us by marketing and the agricultural revolution, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, it doesn't take a whole lot of rocket science to figure out some of the foods that we should and should not be eating. For instance, dairy products. You know, as you mentioned, we're so ingrained with the milk mustache, and the marketing blitz by the Dairy Council is that clearly no human could have ever consumed dairy products until maybe 300 human generations or so ago. And why is that so easy to make that observation? Is because you can't milk a wild animal. You can't even approach a wild animal. So until we domesticate animals, you can't have milk and dairy products. And, you know, so there's many of those types of foods. For instance, we consume on the order of 160 pounds of refined sugars per capita. And Stone Age humans couldn't have consumed refined sugars except for honey because they didn't have the technology to make it. So you can go on down the list. And
Let me ask you a question before we get into that portion of the issue here. Why did you even become interested in a primitive style of diet?
Well, I've been doing this now for probably close to 20, 25 years, and it was actually kind of a personal, selfish thing. I was just interested in the best diet that I could eat for myself. I was a college-level athlete and was always interested in diet and training and health. And in the late 80s, I read a paper by my mentor and colleague, Boyd Eaton from Emory University, published in the New England Journal of Medicine, called Paleolithic Nutrition. And it was about the best idea I'd ever heard about what is the proper diet that we should eat. And so I read that paper, and I read all of the references to it, and I got the references to those papers, and that's kind of where the whole thing started. It was just a lot of reading.
Okay, but then you made it your own project. Obviously, you've done a lot of research into this area.
Right. Well, after 4 or 5 years of all these readings, I started to organize these papers and put them into my file cabinets, and they started to form patterns, you know, grains, dairy, salt, cereals, you name it. And finally, I got up enough courage in the early 90s, I called Boyd Eaton. I called him up on the telephone, and he's a perfect gentleman in every sense of the word, and we had a telephone conversation, lasted about an hour, and by the end of it, he paid me a very great compliment. He says, "Well, it sounds to me like you know more about this than I do." And so I invited him up here to Colorado State University. He gave a talk, and we started writing and publishing together, and that's kind of how the whole thing got going.
Okay, but how do you even study the Paleolithic humans? I mean, are you looking at primitive civilizations that occurred after Paleolithic times, or where do you get your data from to do the research?
Well, first off, let's define the word Paleolithic. Paleo means old, lithic means stone, so this was the old Stone Age, and we define that period 10,000 years ago and earlier, from the time that humans first started making stone tools 2.5 million years ago until 10,000 years ago, when we settled down and we adopted agriculture. And so there are a number of ways in which we can do it. We can study the diets of historically studied hunter-gatherers. Now, they're the best surrogate that we have for Stone Age humans. We can also look at the fossils themselves, and they have they leave trace elements in them, which we call isotopes. And the isotopes can tell us bits and pieces of what they've been eating. As I mentioned, we can also infer what they were eating because of the technology that they didn't have. And another way in which we can determine what these pre-agricultural people were eating was looking by at their physiologic enzyme systems and comparing those to other primates and to other mammals. So there's a variety of ways that we can pinpoint this, and we have published probably close to 100 papers, our research group, in the medical and scientific literature outlining specifically how we do this. If you go to my website, www.thepaleodiet.com, you can download all of these scientific papers as free PDF files.
Excellent. Excellent. There's also some other great stuff on that website. There's a couple nutritional tools there that are great. You know, we talk about the acidic level, acidity level of the body, and I know that you have a great tool on there that lists foods that help you shift the body more towards an alkaline or base. Isn't that correct? Isn't there something?
That's right. You know, and I think that's something that many nutritionists, I teach here at a Division I research institute, and I teach registered dietitians, and for the most part, they've never even heard about acid-base balance, yet there's a vast literature on it, and we've published scientific papers on it. But basically, the idea is that every time you digest any food, it ultimately reports to your kidneys as either acid or base. And the typical Western diet, because we are overloaded with acid-producing foods like grains and salty foods, we have a slight net metabolic acidosis. And the only base-yielding foods are fruits and vegetables. So over the course of a lifetime, what it does is it tends to leach calcium salts from the skeleton and promote osteoporosis, as well as a variety of other diseases.
And I don't want to get too far off of this, the subject at hand, but have you discussed this with the medical orthodoxy? You talk to doctors about this at all?
You know, as I mentioned, I'm a researcher at a Division I university, and so my contact with the medical community comes through scientific conferences and conventions and so forth. So in that regard, certainly they've heard my message. They read it in the scientific papers.
Do you find that they're open to the message that nutrition can play a role in health?
Oh, I think absolutely so. I think that virtually all physicians would be foolish to not say that diet has something to do with overall health. But the problem is they just play lip service to it, and we really don't teach our medical students nutrition.
Bingo.
And they get, I think, maybe, you know, one course or one semester, and they, as you mentioned, they get the orthodoxy, they get the food pyramid, and they don't really get the cutting-edge information that you can only get by reading the literature and staying up with it.
Sure, sure. Are we genetically much different than our Paleolithic ancestors today?
Well, it depends on what genes you're looking at. The human genome, we now realize, comprises about 20 to 25,000 genes. Of those 20 to 25,000 genes, probably about since the agricultural revolution began 10,000 years ago, we've probably identified between 1 and 400 genes, or 100 and 400 genes, that have substantially changed. But when you consider 100 out of 25,000 or even 400 out of 25,000, we're essentially identical to our Stone Age ancestors. And there's a few key genes that are important, but for the most part, our basic physiology is very well adapted to an environment we no longer live in.
Yeah, and so, but the bottom line is that looking at us today and our Paleolithic ancestors, it's clear that the way they ate, they were genetically predisposed to eat that way. They were not influenced by marketing or trends or even flavor. I mean, I have to believe that the dedication to taste and flavor has to be a relatively new concept for the human being.
Well, I think what has happened is that the food processing industry has figured out how to take out the characteristics that we are genetically hardwired for and put them into empty calories. For instance, we are genetically hardwired to seek out sweet tasting foods, but in the real world, in the non-processed world, the only foods that are sweet tasting are fresh fruits, and you don't get a sweet taste combined with fat. And so what we've been able to do is we've been able to extract that sweet taste, combine it with fat and empty calories, and we can call it a candy bar or a donut or a cookie or whatever you want to do, and it has virtually no nutrient, redeeming nutrient characteristics, yet it has a lot of adverse effects. So what the food processing industry over the last 100, 150 years has done is produce foods that trick our bodies, that we are genetically hardwired to go after, because in the environment we evolved in, sweets and came from fruits and they were rare. They occurred seasonally. And the same thing with fatty foods is that they were rare. Wild animals don't get fat.
Right.
And so there was survival value to all of those hardwired tastes. Yet now we've separated the two, and that's the problem.
Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking more with Dr. Cordain about the Paleolithic style of eating, primitive eating. Stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. We'll be right back. Are you tired of the same old pre-workout product? Would you like to catapult your body's growth and performance potential to an entirely new level? LG Science's Anadrolic State GT is the world's first kinetic amplification system. Anadrolic State GT goes beyond the pre-workout powders in functionality, adaptation, and power. Anadrolic State GT is the first of its kind, allowing users to take aggressive control in the gym with ferocious focus, explosive energy, and dominating strength. Anadrolic State GT is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet, and other fine retailers. Get yours today and join the LG Sciences Uprising.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. WiseChoiceMedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Selective androgen receptor modulators represent the future of hormone replacement therapy. Institutions looking to perform research depend upon the potency and authenticity of the materials they buy. That's why your institution needs to trust Chemex for their SARMS materials. Go to chemx.net today for SARMS S4 for your research project. Don't trust the success of your project to questionable sources. Trust chemx.net. That's chemx.net. Chemex.
The federal government is more aggressive than ever prosecuting anabolic steroid-related cases. Whether you're a physician, supplement company, or citizen, ignorance of the law is not a defense. Buying from overseas pharmacies, large numbers of patients on hormone replacement therapy, and releasing new hormone-based supplements can all be red flags to the federal government. Don't take chances. You need attorneys that have years of experience defending anabolic steroid-related cases. You need J. Clark Baird and Bill Butler. Knowledge is power. Know where you stand before the federal government comes knocking. Go to SteroidDefenseLawyers.com. That's SteroidDefenseLawyers.com. Go today and be safer tomorrow.
Selective androgen receptor modulators represent the future of hormone replacement therapy. Institutions looking to perform research depend upon the potency and authenticity of the materials they buy. That's why your institution needs to trust Chemex for their SARMS materials. Go to chemx.net today for SARMS S4 for your research project. Don't trust the success of your project to questionable sources. Trust chemx.net. That's chemx.net. Chemex.net. All of your favorite supplements are waiting for you at the best prices and fastest customer service at OrbitNutrition.com. Even some of the more popular supplements advertised right here on Superhuman Radio. They carry All-American EFX, LG Sciences, and Primordial Performance products at the best prices on the net. Visit OrbitNutrition.com today and check out their complete line. Give them a chance to fill your order. You won't be disappointed. OrbitNutrition.com. The best supplements in the universe are at OrbitNutrition.com. Did you know you can listen to Superhuman Radio while mobile? That's right. Go to the iPhone store and download the free Shoutcast app and then search for the Superhuman channel.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
forget, there's lots of free stuff at superhumanradio.com. Go to the homepage. Go down to the area that says free stuff. You can get free samples of concrete, the new creatine molecule. You can get free samples of Gamma O, which is a natural testosterone booster. Free samples of Ibunex, which is a topical ibuprofen product. And also free samples of Drive, which is a non-stimulant-based pre-workout supplement. And you never pay shipping and handling on Superhuman Radio. My guest today is Dr. Lauren Cordain. We're talking about the primitive way of eating. Dr. Cordain, how exactly did our primitive ancestors eat as compared to today?
Well, I think it's, I think the big issue is where we get our calories today. And in a paper we published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, we were able to show the origins and evolution of the Western diet. And 70% of the energy in the typical U.S. diet comes from refined sugars, refined grains, refined oils. And none of these foods, and dairy products, and none of these foods would have been available to our ancestors. So if you, that's 70% of the energy in our diet. If you take those out, then what did our ancestors eat? They ate more fresh fruits and vegetables and more lean meat and seafood. And when you do that, the energy density and the trace nutrient density and the phytochemical density of the diet increases and improves our health.
Okay, now let's talk for a moment about animal proteins, because there's right now in the media that I remember one of the national morning shows recently, they were talking about how red meat increases the risk of cancer. Now, obviously, our primitive ancestors probably got a lot of their protein from what would be considered red meat today, from animal proteins, correct?
That's right.
And animal fat, too, right?
That's right.
Okay, so is it fair to say that the quality of meat that they were eating back then was better than the quality of meat that we're eating today?
Well, I think that's one of the issues is all of the meat that they were consuming was wild meat, game meat. And once again, our research group has analyzed the fatty acid content of game meat. We've contrasted that to grain-fed animals, which is how we are basically most people get their red meat today. And the fatty acid profile is much different. Wild game meat has higher omega-3 fatty acids in it. They also ate the entire carcass. They ate the brains, they ate the marrow, they ate the organs. And when you do that, it also gives you different fatty acid balance as well. You get a lot more monounsaturated fatty acids and a lot more long-chain polyunsaturated fatty acids. So when you talk about eating red meat today, it's like comparing apples and oranges. And there's a couple of other caveats. First off, the paper that showed that was an epidemiologic paper. It came out just a week or two ago, and it looked at the risk of colon cancer in 500,000 people. And first off, your listeners need to know that epidemiologic papers that are descriptive in nature, like that one was, can never show cause and effect. Let me give you an example. There's a very good correlation between the size of a fire in New York City and the number of fire trucks that are at the fire. So can we say that more fire trucks cause larger fires or vice versa? So,
that's a good one.
Yeah, so the point is that you can never show causality. All you can demonstrate are relationships. And in large population studies like that, there are multiple confounding elements. And, for instance, everybody pretty much that eats a lot of red meat in the United States, they eat basically everything. They're eating refined carbohydrates along with the red meat.
Right.
Now, you can statistically, like, for instance, smoking and some of these other factors that we know, you can statistically take those things out. But you still don't have people that ate red meat under the circumstances that people in the Stone Age did. And they ate red meat under a very high fruit and vegetable diet. And we know that any potential mechanisms that epidemiologists have identified, because there's an association, you still have to show a mechanism. And so the mechanisms that they have shown, we know experimentally, are countered by a high fresh fruit and vegetable diet. So we believe that our Stone Age ancestors had a reduced risk for colon cancer rather than an increased risk. I'll give you a for instance, if you look at the Inuit people pre-contact, and we still have some pretty good data from the turn of the century till the 1930s and 40s before they became westernized, they were getting more than 90% of their calories from animal food, and they had a very, very low incidence, almost negligible incidence of breast, colon, and prostate cancer, yet they were eating 95% of their energy. Well, part of it was they were getting a lot of omega-3s from the marine mammals that they were eating. Now, once they become westernized and they started eating refined sugars and refined flours and grains and their diet looked more like what we're eating, then the incidence of these chronic degenerative diseases rose.
Right. I think there was a fellow named Stephenson.
Yes.
Who actually lived with the Inuits and ate that way and observed.
That's right.
And but his thing was the fat. I mean, he I learned about Stephenson from Randy Roach's book Muscle, Smoke and Mirrors about the importance of the content of fat that they would track a caribou and just for the fat. I mean, they wanted that fat so desperately, and that's counterintuitive to the way we're told to eat today. If you listen to you know, the talking heads on television, you know, fat is bad, and they'll sell you ice cream with the fat removed, but plenty
of
sugar.
Well, you know, I think that increasingly, I mean, that notion, I don't know how old you are, Carl, but I think
I'm 50.
Yeah, well, I think that notion is starting to change, you know, and once again, at a Division I research institute here, like at Colorado State University, we're not really teaching that anymore. I think that dogma is the dogma of the 70s and the 80s and the early 90s, because we now know that fat is not a quantitative issue, it's a qualitative issue, and we've known it for 35 years. It's just that the message that has got out to the public through certain governmental agencies is incorrect. The idea
right.
that a low-fat diet is going to cure everything from cancer to heart disease is simply incorrect. And
right.
we now know it's a much more complex issue, and it's a qualitative issue. It's the types of fats. Let me give you, for instance, not all saturated fats elevate your blood cholesterol levels. As a matter of fact, there is one saturated fat, about half of the saturated fat in wild animals is a fat called stearic acid. And stearic acid actually lowers blood cholesterol compared to palmitic acid, which is also saturated fat. So the average consumer out there, it's like, oh, this is too complicated. I don't want to know. You just tell me all I got to do is cut the fat out of my diet. That isn't going to work. Same thing with the types of carbohydrate. We were saying, well, you need complex carbohydrates. Well, that issue is wrong, too, because potatoes are complex carbohydrates, but they have a very high glycemic load.
Right.
So it's the devil's in the details. And
we don't, and as a population, we don't want to know the details. We want someone to just tell us what to eat.
Well, they want you to tell you what to eat, but they want it simple. And so, you know, this is why the paleo diet is so simple. It's, hey, listen, fresh fruits, vegetables, lean meats. Walk around the outside of the supermarket aisles and choose from that. Stay away from the middle aisles and you're in pretty good shape.
Is there any evidence of the types of chronic diseases we have today in our primitive ancestors?
You know, we have bits and pieces of that. The skeleton can tell us just so much. Clearly, they didn't have dental caries. We know that because we don't see that whatsoever. So they also, osteoporosis pretty much didn't exist. They didn't have rheumatoid arthritis. They had osteoarthritis. The difference was is that when you load the skeleton mechanically, again and again and again, you can produce osteoarthritis, but rheumatoid arthritis is an autoimmune disease, and it looks like all the available evidence suggests that autoimmune diseases were either non-existent or their incidence was incredibly lower than it is today. For instance, multiple sclerosis, psoriasis, many of these autoimmune diseases that afflict us in the Western world were not part of the issue. Same thing with atherosclerosis. Is we know that they had atherosclerosis, but it wasn't fatal. They didn't ever end up, or we believe that they didn't end up with fatal myocardial infarctions, and that the response to the atherosclerotic process was different. The arteries actually expanded rather than forming a plaque, and the fibrous cap on the plaque broke. Well, that's what kills us with a heart attack.
Right.
And we believe that there are inflammatory mediators in the Western diet that ultimately cause that fibrous cap to break up. The healthy response to atherosclerosis is to form a fibrous plaque that stays fibrous and doesn't break and cause a clot.
So it stays pliable, in other words.
That's right. And that's so we think that what's going on is that the typical Western diet has very pro-inflammatory agents in it, and these inflammatory agents then upregulate metalloproteinases. These are enzymes that break down the fibrous cap. And so by eliminating grain and legumes, we think that grain and legumes contain components in them that promote inflammation.
Now, are those the lectins? Did you talk? You told me about naturally occurring agents in some of these, like legumes and so on, that were designed to be natural pesticides, but when we eat them, they cause an inflammatory response. Was that you that told me that, or someone else?
It could have been. That's the message I've been delivering the last decade or more since we published a paper in the British Journal of Nutrition outlining that hypothesis. But there's actually two components that are in legumes. Grains, some grains have both of these components. They're called saponins and lectins. And what saponins do, saponins are kind of a double-edged sword, is that on certain diseases, they're very helpful. On others, they seem to promote them. So both of those two anti-nutrients are put into the seeds genetically because, remember, the seeds of a plant are the reproductive material. And if a predator comes along and eats the reproductive material, the plant can't reproduce, and it's gone. It's history. So natural selection takes it out. And what plants have done, instead of they've designed these anti-nutrients or toxic compounds that prevent predators from consuming them because they have these toxic effects. And so lectins and saponins have those effects. And so we believe that the saponins tend to promote a leaky gut. And a leaky gut then tends to elevate the inflammatory process because there are certain gut bacteria, the so-called gram-negative gut bacteria, that have a protein called lipopolysaccharide, or LPS, in their cell walls, and that LPS leaks into the circulation and upregulates or increases this inflammatory response.
And potatoes share that too, don't they?
That's right. Potatoes are the largest dietary product in the Western world containing saponins. And so potatoes are really a bad food. They jack the glycemic index or the glycemic load way, way up. And then to add insult to injury, they increase the leakiness of your gut through these saponins. And that promotes this inflammatory response. So potatoes are not a good food at all.
Yeah, I know. And isn't it funny? All the things that are really wrong for us is primarily what people eat today. It's really sad. It frustrates the heck out of me. It's got to frustrate you too, I bet. Let's say I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay, it goes back to what we're hardwired for, and we're hardwired for starch because starch and carbohydrate and refined sugars are very, very rare in the terrestrial environment, at least that are edible for humans. And so when we find it, we eat it because it would have survival value. But the problem is that once again, we couldn't ever get these things in unlimited quantity,
and we couldn't
cook them. And
that's part of the problem, the unlimited quantities part there. Let's take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we'll talk some more with Dr. Cordain. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. We'll be right back.
Keep a secret code so everybody else don't have to know.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right, buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household. Are you tired of the same old pre-workout product? Would you like to catapult your body's growth and performance potential to an entirely new level? LG Science's Anadrolic State GT is the world's first kinetic amplification system. Anadrolic State GT goes beyond the pre-workout powders in functionality, adaptation, and power. Anadrolic State GT is the first of its kind, allowing users to take aggressive control in the gym with ferocious focus, explosive energy, and dominating strength. Anadrolic State GT is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet, and other fine retailers. Get yours today and join the LG Science's uprising. A company committed to truth in advertising, to science-driven product development, a company that still believes in accountability to its customers. All American EFX is that company. With a full line of performance-enhancing aids like Crealkaline EFX Pro, muscle pump amplifiers like Nitrix EFX, growth and recovery enhancers like LBA Pro and LG5 Pro, and a fully tested core nutrition series. So if you want the very best in bodybuilding and performance supplements, go to any GNC or visit AAEFX.com today. That's AAEFX.com. All American EFX. We don't play games. We just help you win them. Life is a continuous journey, and Change Your Life Now gives you the tools for continuous empowerment. Change Your Life Now is a practical guide to the biological process of age reversal. It's deliberately understandable and concise, so you can employ its message immediately and begin to realize the changes within days. The reader need only provide a positive attitude, desire, and discipline, and the results are guaranteed. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Change Your Life Now banner ad to learn more or to order your copy today. Don't wait another moment. Change your life now. We all know how effective amino acid supplements are. Well, get ready to be shocked. Amino acid supplements just reached a new level of strength. Say hello to GEAR. GEAR is super concentrated, super potent, and so bioavailable, it's equivalent to injectable amino acids. GEAR is best used between meals to keep nitrogen balances tilted towards anabolism. GEAR causes an increase in anabolic signaling that tells your muscles it's time to grow. Get GEAR today by visiting needtobuildmuscle.net. GEAR. This ain't your daddy's amino acid supplement. Turinabol from PrimordialPerformance.com is a Haladrol clone. Turinabol will give you up to 15 pounds of lean body mass in as little as 6 weeks. Since Turinabol does not aromatize, there's no conversion to estrogen. Turinabol takes advantage of the patented Liquivade technology to ensure the maximum delivery of this powerful anabolic agent. Users of Turinabol report increased strength and lean gains with little side effects. Get Turinabol today while supplies last at PrimordialPerformance.com. Don't wait for Turinabol to be added to the federal ban list. Turinabol. Have you been on superhumanradio.com lately? Lots of free supplements, great information, and older episodes of Superhuman Radio are all available. Go to superhumanradio.com today.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
The University of Illinois just published a study that shows that whey protein is more anabolic than egg, soy, or wheat. And the best whey protein you can buy is American Whey. They have great flavors, the highest protein content, and very, very reasonably priced. Check it out at AmericanWhey.com. That's AmericanWHEY.com. My guest today is Dr. Lauren Cordain from the University of Colorado. I'm sorry, Colorado State University. And we're talking about the primitive diet, its importance in health, as well as performance, I would imagine, right? Dr. Cordain, you have a lot of athletes that use this diet as well.
Yeah, we wrote the first book was The Paleo Diet. The second book was The Paleo Diet for Athletes, which I co-authored with Joe Friel, who was the U.S. Olympic triathlete coach at the Sydney Olympics, and he coaches many world-class endurance athletes.
Now, there is anytime I've talked about primitive styles of eating, whether it was inspired by your teachings and writings or by Randy Roach's book, Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors, I mean, I always get the same response from people, and that is, if the primitive style of diet was so great, why is lifespan so much longer today?
You know, if I've answered that question once, I've answered it probably 1,000 times. I've answered it so many times that we published a paper on it, a scientific paper. And if you go to my website, thepaleodiet.com, you can download that scientific paper and read all about it. But then, in a nutshell, let me just give you the cliff notes on it. Say, for instance, you have four people, two adults, and they have two children. The two children die during childbirth. The four adults make it to 80, and they both die at 80. Okay, so the average age of death of that group of four people is 40 years of age, right?
Right.
So it sounds like that they don't live very long. Well, they actually do live long, and the average age of death doesn't tell us anything about living people. So what we really need to do is we need to construct what are called life tables, and that's what insurance companies do, is to be interested not the people that are dead, but the people that are living. And so if we look at hunter-gatherer populations with life tables, what we find is that of the four or five life tables that have been published, a substantial number of the hunter-gatherers make it into their sixth, seventh, and eighth decade and beyond. Now, it's hard to quantify their age because most of them are illiterate and they don't count, so we kind of have to extrapolate how old they are, so the data is not as good as we would like it. But the big issue is here is when they do make it to their old age, their sixth, seventh, and eighth decade, they are not overweight, they're not obese, they're not insulin resistant, They don't have high blood pressure, and their blood lipids, blood cholesterol levels are normal. So I think it's a qualitative issue. Think about camping out for your entire life and realize how dangerous that would be. And so what tended to kill those people earlier in life was accidents. They had no medicine. They had no pharmaceuticals or very few pharmaceuticals. If you cut a major artery, they had no knowledge of medicine, your history. So, you know, there was a lot of things that don't make the playing table equal. But what our point has always been is let's take the best of their world and take it with us and leave the worst behind. And so we live in a modern medical situation, and what we can do is we can emulate the type of diet that we have, and we know that through tens of thousands, if not millions, of medical and scientific studies on nutrition, diet, and health, it keeps coming back to the same template. Why are omega-3 fatty acids so helpful? Why is a glycemic load helpful? Why are fruits and vegetables helpful? Why does a higher protein diet seem to benefit health so much? Why are certain phytochemicals so helpful? Is because they all fit into this template of this diet that evolved with, that we shaped, that shaped our genes, our genetic makeup. And so when we make our modern diet consistent with those characteristics, everything seems to get better.
Yeah, and the other thing too that, that people point to is just a couple, you know, maybe even 100 or 200 years ago. You know, part of the confusion about, and I think that what the pharmaceutical industry has capitalized on is this misconception that in the 1700s and 1800s, lifespan and longevity were not, were very short. Because, again, we have skewed numbers from those periods as well because of the high rate of infant mortality and the high rate of death due to infectious disease. You know, we solved those two problems. You know, I think I heard somewhere that back in the 17 and through the 1800s, physicians didn't even wash their hands in between delivering babies.
That's right. You're absolutely right, Carl. And, you know, we've now have a water supply that's clean. I mean, so, you know, there's multiple elements that are responsible for that, and we've addressed all of those in that scientific paper. And so the intuitive notion that they all died earlier really is incorrect. And, you know, you've got, once again, the devil's in the details, and so you've got to look at those kind of details to make comparisons, because the comparisons really are unfair unless you consider those details.
Now, when people start to follow a primitive diet, Do they start to see changes in their, not necessarily their body, but in their health relatively quickly, or is it something that you have to do for a while?
I think most people, probably within days of adopting it, the first thing they do is they feel more energy. You know, it's typical in the Western world to have these energy peaks and valleys throughout the day. And those are related to the types of foods that we're eating, high glycemic load carbohydrates. You get up and you have a bowl of cereal and with skim milk in it and maybe a glass of orange juice, a cup of coffee with sugar in it. You feel great for the first hour or so after you've eaten that, and within 2 hours your blood sugar has plummeted and it's gone back down. So by mid-morning you need a donut or whatever. And what people find is that instead of having a high glycemic load hit for breakfast, if you have a high protein with an appropriate fat and a low glycemic load fruit, and what you find is it stabilizes your blood sugar. And so people typically have more energy throughout the day within the first couple of days. And as soon as you knock all of the processed foods, you knock the salt out of your diet. We know that salt makes, if you remove the salt from your diet, it's going to make you sleep better. So people tend to sleep better, and they have more even energy. And then depending upon what their health problems are, what you know, what the big issues are, many of those issues subside within weeks to months, depending on how sick they are when they started this program.
You know, I interviewed a scientist from University of Montreal a couple weeks ago, and they're doing some research now. You know, obviously some of this research, like the research on the hypocaloric diet and its effect on longevity and sirtuins and all that sort of stuff, usually
sure.
It starts out with yeast and then moves to a worm. What's that worm? Something longus.
Yeah.
And then eventually it moves to mammals and so on. And they started doing some research in yeast already in the the early research they've done shows that glucose signaling leads to advanced aging. So just the presence of glucose in the blood, and then you start talking about the high amounts of carbohydrate and refined carbohydrates that most Americans eat. 180 pounds. You said 160. I found a statistic on the internet this morning that shows 180 pounds per person.
Well, that could be. The data that I quoted was as of 2004. So, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me to see it even higher still.
And, you know, Dr. Paul Dudley White, who was the founder of the American Heart Association and the man who introduced the electrocardiogram to the United States, wrote a position paper in 32, 33. And in that paper, he said that through his education and his internship and his early years of practice, he had only encountered one myocardial infarction, and then by 1932 or 33, when he wrote the position paper, he said that the rate of heart attack had increased by 60% in just from 1910 to that period of time. And he pointed to the introduction of Crisco by Procter & Gamble, the first hydrogenated oil, the reliance on corn oils, and the increase in refined sweetener consumption. And he begged people, he said, go back to animal fats and butter, go return to tallow, go back to, raw foods, and abandon sugar and abandon refined oils. And no one paid attention to him because it was not in the economic benefit of these manufacturers to pay attention to him. And look at where we are today. There's so many people who died prematurely if they would have just listened to this man who started the American Heart Association because there was a problem coming.
Well, Paul Dudley White is one of my heroes, and he was the cardiologist that tended to President Eisenhower when he had a heart attack in office. And that's really what I think got people aware of the diet-heart hypothesis. He's also a hero of mine because he made a statement. He says that humanity, and man in particular, and women are good field animals, i.e. we're meant to exercise and go out and be in the open and the outdoors. And so I think he probably, were he alive today, would be right on board with this paleo diet concept. And when we look at what causes heart disease, the diet fat hypothesis was the original idea, and now we realize that inflammation is at least as important, if not more important, than dietary fats in eliciting the disease. Every step of the way in which atherosclerosis occurs requires a chronic low-level inflammation, and those type of recommendations that White had made, even though he was far ahead of his time, he didn't realize it, is that those type of recommendations would tend to downregulate the inflammatory process.
Now, that's an interesting point. It's very clear inflammation's relationship to disrupting the apoptotic landscape and many cancers. Is there any evidence that cancer occurs in primitives?
Well, you know, we actually haven't published this. We've compiled the data, and the data clearly is weak, because anytime you go back to the time when the people were unwesternized or unacculturated, you can't go in and look at huge, vast numbers that we need to get. For instance, if we look at the incidence rates of total cancers per 100,000, it might be 40 or 50 or 80 or 100 or 200. But to be able to get numbers for 100,000 people that are non-westernized is very difficult to do, particularly when we're dealing with data from the 1880s and 1890s. But based on the available data, what it suggests to us, because we've done those extrapolations, those epidemiologic extrapolations, we haven't published this stuff, but it looks like the cancer rates were at least half. And it's somewhat dependent on latitude as well. It seems like at the northern latitudes in hunter-gatherers, the cancer incidence rates were virtually negligible, whereas as you move more towards the tropics, where they were encountering, because cancer can be elicited by multiple environmental agents, including infections and so forth, but it seems like they were still, even at the middle latitudes, they were about half of what we're seeing today.
Yeah. What do you happen to know what the Okinawans eat? By and large, I know that everybody's always interested in the Okinawans because of longevity. I know the Hunza, we did a show on the Hunza because they're lacto-vegans. Do you happen to know what the Okinawans eat?
Well, you know, I don't have it completely categorized. We actually, in we have written papers on in the medical literature on how diet is responsible for acne, and one of the first tip-offs that we had is that we went back and looked at some older epidemiologic work from the just post-World War II era when Okinawa was really out in the middle of the South Seas, and it was not westernized at all, and the U.S. physicians that went to Okinawa at the time, just post-World War II, consulted with their physicians on the island, and they said that acne simply was not part of the issue. So, but once they got westernized, acne started to filter into the population. So what those folks were eating would have been the foods that would have been available to them. And it's probably similar to the Katavan-type diet, which is what we have studied, which is an island off the coast of Papua New Guinea. And what those folks were eating was a lot of tubers, a lot of fresh vegetables, a lot of tropical fruits, and the meats that they ate were primarily fish and a little bit of pork that they could raise. So I would suspect that that would be have been the diet from these Okinawans.
Do you think that there is any validity to the idea that due to certain polymorphisms, people of different regions of the world are genetically predisposed to do better with certain foods? So, for instance, if you took, you know, that group that you just described and tried to make them eat, you know, a diet like they would, let's say, in Scandinavia, which maybe there's Scandinavian people who live for a long time on that particular primitive diet, but because of the evolution of their genes, that they do not respond as well to those foods. Do you think there's any validity to that?
I think there's a little bit to it. You know, I think that there's a starting point with this paleo diet. The paleo diet represents kind of the overall starting point. And I do believe that there are polymorphisms that perhaps maybe those polymorphisms, there's a few that we know that are clearly diet-related, like the adult lactase persistence gene. And there's a few other hemoglobinopathies that are related to malaria. And there's also apoprotein E polymorphisms that relate to lipid metabolism. So I think that there probably are a few genes, but by and large, I think that the starting point has to be a diet that is made up of non-processed foods, very low in sugar, refined carbohydrates, and so forth.
I have a friend, a very close friend, who went on the APOE diet. And are you familiar with it?
I'm not familiar with that, but I certainly know what APOE is.
Right. Okay. Well, the diet is the gene diet, and they do the lab work first, and then they tell you what you're genetically designed to eat. And she was told not to eat any fish, not to use any fish oil supplements whatsoever. And I said, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard because, you know, omegas are so important. I said, obviously, you can get your omegas somewhere else, but, gee, I've never heard that. So you think there's any validity that some people just shouldn't eat fish oils?
You know, I think most of the available evidence would not point in that direction. I try to keep an open mind, but I really don't know of any adverse health effects whatsoever, except for nosebleeds in the Inuit. But those certainly aren't, they're a nuisance, but they're not certainly not fatal. But I think that the cost-to-benefit ratio is huge, and I think that vitamin D and fish oil probably should, across the board, should be supplemented in everybody in the United States.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. Listen, let's take our last commercial break, and then we'll close the show. We'll tell people more about how they can get in touch with you and get your books. Stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. We'll be right back.
The girl who never wants to be alone. Never want to be that girl at 4 o'clock in the morning.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. Wise Choice Medicine. CanSee.net. CanSee Eye Drops. The name says it all.
Are you tired of the same old pre-workout product? Would you like to catapult your body's growth and performance potential to an entirely new level? LG Science's Anadrolic State GT is the world's first kinetic amplification system. Anadrolic State GT goes beyond the pre-workout powders in functionality, adaptation, and power. Anadrolic State GT is the first of its kind, allowing users to take aggressive control in the gym with ferocious focus, explosive energy, and dominating strength. Anadrolic State GT is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet, and other fine retailers. Get yours today and join the LG Sciences Uprising. We all know how effective amino acid supplements are. Well, get ready to be shocked. Amino acid supplements just reached a new level of strength. Say hello to Gear. Gear is super concentrated, super potent, and so bioavailable, it's equivalent to injectable amino acids. Gear is best used between meals to keep nitrogen balances tilted towards anabolism. Gear causes an increase in anabolic signaling that tells your muscles it's time to grow. Get Gear today by visiting needtobuildmuscle.net. Gear. This ain't your daddy's amino acid supplement. Selective androgen receptor modulators represent the future of hormone replacement therapy. Institutions looking to perform research depend upon the potency and authenticity of the materials they buy. That's why your institution needs to trust Chemex for their SARMS materials. Go to chemx.net today for SARMS S4 for your research project. Don't trust the success of your project to questionable sources. Trust chemx.net. That's chemx.net. Chemex.net.
The federal government is more aggressive than ever prosecuting anabolic steroid-related cases. Whether you're a physician, supplement company, or citizen, ignorance of the law is not a defense. Buying from overseas pharmacies, large numbers of patients on hormone replacement therapy, and releasing new hormone-based supplements can all be red flags to the federal government. Don't take chances. You need attorneys that have years of experience defending anabolic steroid-related cases. You need J. Clark Baird and Bill Butler. Knowledge is power. Know where you stand before the federal government comes knocking. Go to SteroidDefenseLawyers.com. That's SteroidDefenseLawyers.com. Go today and be safer tomorrow.
Life is a continuous journey, and Change Your Life Now gives you the tools for continuous empowerment. Change Your Life Now is a practical guide to the biological process of age reversal. It's deliberately understandable and concise, so you can employ its message immediately and begin to realize the changes within days. The reader need only provide a positive attitude, desire, and discipline, and the results are guaranteed. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Change Your Life Now banner ad to learn more or to order your copy today. Don't wait another moment. Change your life now. Did you know you can listen to Superhuman Radio while mobile? That's right. Go to the iPhone store and download the free Shoutcast app and then search for the Superhuman channel.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Welcome back. Dr. Lauren Cordain, the author of The Paleo Diet. That book was published quite a while ago, wasn't it?
2002.
Yeah, and you've had a few other books come out, right?
Yeah, and I tell you what, we're selling as many copies now, probably more so than when it came out. It's one of those books that, you know, it doesn't require a charismatic personality. It's the message and the data speak for itself.
I think it makes perfect sense. I mean, I get into these discussions, and I'm not much fun at parties as a result of this. I really am. You know, I actually was at a party the other night, and the host, who's a friend, kept moving me from place to place because I kept in rate. You could see. You know what the funny thing is? When you start talking to people about giving up carbs, the starchy, refined carbs, at the end, and you start talking to them about eating more animal proteins and fats, and you start talking to them about the importance of finding good sources of you know, farm-raised, grass-fed, hormone-free animals that live the way they were designed and genetically predisposed to live, and making those the source of your... It's almost like trying to convert somebody from one political agenda or from their religion. It's like they don't want to hear it. It's like, no, you're wrong. They say, why would the FDA recommend that the majority of my diet be, you know, cereals and grains if it was wrong? It's like, wow, I'm sorry I brought it up.
You know, I think things are changing. I think that the paradigm is changing. What do they say? It requires a generation to fully change it. Because, as I mentioned earlier, you know, the whole issue about fat is that there is a dyed-in-the-wool generation, probably people our age and maybe slightly younger, that think that all fat is bad. And the same thing is true is when they hear about animal protein, the knee-jerk response from that generation of people is that all meat is bad as well, when in reality we threw out the baby with the bathwater. And if we can emulate the types of meat that we are genetically programmed to eat with our Western foods, we're going to be in a lot better shape.
Now, you mentioned at the beginning of the show about milk. Do you have a position on raw, unpasteurized milk?
Well, we don't support drinking any sorts of dairy products, and we think that for a variety of reasons, if you go to my website, you can download all the papers that outline the multiple mechanisms. But we don't think any dairy products are healthful, and we don't think that you're going to end up with osteoporosis or a calcium shortage if you eat the paleo manner. We believe that a high fruit and vegetable diet will overcome it. Clearly, humanity had to have lived for 2.5 million years without dairy products. We know they produce healthy, strong bones just like any animal. We have elk here in Colorado that have beautifully healthy bones, and they don't drink milk. No other mammal does. So milk is a strange substance. It's meant to make small cows turn into large cows very, very rapidly, and to potentially benefit their immune system by getting the hormones from their mother into their bloodstream. And what we are increasingly realizing is that the hormones in cow's milk ultimately either get in our blood or the hormones affect our hormones in our blood. And so milk is not a good substance.
Okay. Now tell people how they can, now obviously my listeners are probably going, Carl, say something, because I drink 5 gallons of raw milk a week, but that's my choice. Anyway, it works for me. That's all I'm going to say. But anyway, tell people how they can get your books and
well, they can go to our website, thepaleodiet.com, or just Google my name, Lauren Cordain, and the first hit that comes up would be my website. And so you can get all my books there. You can get all my scientific papers as well.
If you go to Google and just put the name Cordain in, you come up right. The first choice is Cordain Paleo Diet.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah, so it's very popular. And I really applaud you, I mean, for writing this book. And I know that people are going to resist because people are just resistant in general. But for the sake of your children, you need to really think more about eating this way and preparing family meals this way. I mean, our kids are eating way too many, you know, fried potatoes and stuff that is just, I mean, I have to believe that the disease that manifests itself later in life starts earlier in life than we think it does.
You're absolutely right, and I don't think that there's a whole lot that's controversial about a diet that says you ought to reduce the amount of refined processed foods in your diet, reduce the amount of sugars, increase the fruits, increase the vegetables, increase the fish, increase the lean meat. I don't think you're going to find an argument with any of your listeners, or very few of them. The only thing that's somewhat controversial, and once again the data speaks for itself, is we don't believe grains of any type, either refined or whole, should be consumed, and we don't believe that dairy products should be consumed. And we point in that direction because that's what the evolutionary evidence indicates. So the evolutionary template is a very, very powerful organizing template, and evolution didn't design the system incorrectly. Evolution designed it optimally, and so certainly this is a starting point. You can tweak it, but I think that in the long run, we'll find that drinking milk or eating dairy products or a high-grain diet in most people have very adverse effects.
And then right before, we have just a minute, you were doing some research on peanut lectins when we last spoke, correct?
Yeah, we actually have been looking at peanut lectins, and we've been looking at wheat lectins as well. And what we're finding is that peanuts contain not just lectins but saponins, and we think that that's one reason why peanuts are so allergy-producing. Peanut allergy is one of the most frequent allergy in young children and adults, and it can be life-threatening. And the reason for it is we believe these saponins open up the gut and make it more permeable and actually elicit an immune response. Similarly with wheat, wheat contains a protein called gliadin, and it does the same thing. It makes the gut leaky by upregulating a protein called zonulin. And so we know this happens not just in celiac patients, but in normals. So anybody that eats wheat on this planet is going to have a leakier gut than what would be normal.
Okay. All right, and this is the end of the show, but nuts are out of the question also, real quick.
Oh, well, peanuts are legumes.
Right, but I mean, what about walnuts and real nuts?
Well, I think that if people don't, that's another frequent food allergy. If they don't have an allergy to nuts, they're probably okay.
Okay. All right, listen, Dr. Cordain, as usual, thank you very much for taking your time today to come on the show and educate my listeners. Please go to his website. He's got so many nutritional tools there that I still refer to from time to time. It's the Paleo, P-A-L-E-O, diet.com. Dr. Cordain, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Hey, thank you, Carl. It's my pleasure.
Okay, and we'll see everybody tomorrow with another episode of Superhuman Radio. Thanks for listening. Tune into the Superhuman Channel 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and listen to classic episodes of Superhuman Radio. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Listen Now button.
Spit that out right now.